All right, are we good?
Kind of. I gotta pee.
I do too. I was gonna try to barrel through it, but we can break.
Let's just break.
What's up? This is Movies On Up. Life is easier done than said. I am Dave, joined by my easy co-host, Ryan.
I feel like I have to sing this one.
It's not pitch perfect.
No, no.
Different Anna Kendrick movie.
Yeah, I know. It was. He had to sing because he couldn't.
Oh yeah.
Couldn't speak.
Yeah, yeah,
yeah.
But we are Movies On Up. If you know what movie that tagline is from, life is easier done than said. It's not pitch perfect.
It's also not rocket science. I mean, you'll figure it out.
It is rocket science.
Oh, yeah.
Let us know, moviesonup @gmail.com, facebook.com/moviesonup, or Twitter @moviesonup. Just send us the name of the movie or Ghost Dad. Or Ghost Dad, and we will send you the totally 100% existent Movies On Up prize package. This week, different episode for us. Generally, we have a stupid list, or we talk about some stupid actor, or we talk about a stupid movie. Independence Day Resurgence comes out this
weekend. Probably.
This weekend, probably, yeah. And instead of doing our favorite Make 'em in a Row movies or whatever, which
it'd
I would be
a short list,
but I love them both. We decided. Well, Ryan threw out, "Hey, what do you think about when you think of Independence Day?" The
explosions.
Speech. The speech from President Pullman. So Ryan thought about, like, yeah, what about favorite movie speeches? At first, I was against the idea because I don't like to do work, and that I knew would require some research. But as we went, I stopped at 8. I came up with 8 that I really, really liked and weaned it down to 5, which was hard, and I stopped. So, like, I know there's others that...
Oh, there's tons.
And there's one that I wanted to do, but I couldn't find anywhere, so I had to cut it out. What was your process? Did you find them easily?
Yeah, I feel like when you see the movie... There are some that get burned into your head, like the Independence Day one. They liked it so much, it was featured pretty heavily in the trailer for Resurgence. And that one's not on the list. It very easily could be, but there's just movies that the speeches will stick out in your mind and you remember them. So I just took the first 5 I thought of, and I liked them all. I loved them all. I had no problem with that being my list. But then... After a couple weeks, there were a couple different ones that popped into my head that I really wanted to put on there instead. And I bookended my list with them. One of them is my number 5 and the other is my number 1. Lists that I love are ones that if we do 5 times, we'll probably have 5 different lists and maybe 25. I mean, certainly 25 different movies from mine. Maybe Dave's got another 25 because it's not specific in that. Any genre can have a great speech in it, so it's not like our favorite horror movies and we got to play in that sandbox together. We can really go anywhere, and I thought that was really nice. Sometimes it's hard to research like that because you can't narrow it down and get your mind thinking. I knew off the top of my head so many great speeches that I love for movies. When we first threw out the idea, you threw out 3 or 4 of them, and I was like, yep, all those are good.
I mean, my favorite that I'll explain why I left it off later is... The first one that came to mind was Deep Blue Sea, Samuel L. Jackson. That, I think, is one of my favorite movie speeches ever, just because it's so ridiculous. And there's a couple others that came to mind that I kind of have on also-rans, but I like that all of them, most of mine are from different points of the movie, and they stand for different things in the movie. And that's kind of where I went from.
Mine do not. They're almost all from, like... In the third act.
2 of mine are. So, yeah. I mean, the others. And another thing was, like, what are we constituting a speech? Like, how long does it have to be? Because I thought of the Captain America part in Avengers 2 where it's like he goes through and he's like, if you get hurt, walk it off. Or whatever it was. If you die, walk it off. Like, that's a good, like, speech, but it's not long. It wasn't like this big giant monologue. It was just really good in the moment, and I didn't go back and research because I had so much others. Like, that was kind of one of mine where it's like, okay, if I have to go back to it, I will. But the ones that I got, I think, qualify as legit speeches. So I'm excited for this list, and we thought we didn't know exactly how we were going to do it. You can't talk about famous movie speeches and just say, oh, I really like the speech from Deep Blue Sea.
Right.
What's your number 5? So we weren't really sure how we were going to do it, and I asked if it was possible to just run a link to the mixer and play the audio of the movie, of the speech.
And it is. We just can't do it in real time.
Yeah, and Ryan had a better idea. So we like when we get to do Movies On Up Theater. So We are going to do movies on Up Theater, and as we go through our list, we have not seen each other's list, but as we kick off, Ryan will say what his five is, and then I have to deliver that
speech. Dave will sight read it, essentially.
Yeah.
So bear with us as we're stumbling through the words. We've heard these. I only know Dave's number five because I'm looking at it now. I've seen this movie, and I've heard this speech, but
it's not fresh in your head.
No, it is not.
But so let's start off with your number five.
My number five, like I said, you can do different genres. And I think that one of the most obvious genres for speeches is war movies, because you tend to get great speeches from commanders preparing troops for a battle. And that's exactly what you got from Viggo Mortensen in Return of the King from 2003, Peter Jackson's cap-off to the Lord of the Rings trilogy. There's a lot of battles in this movie. It's pretty much one battle after the next, and most of them seemingly like they're more difficult to win than the previous one. And basically, in the third act, we find Viggo and his ragtag group of menfolk on the doorstep of the big bad guy on what is ostensibly a suicide mission. They know they're badly outnumbered, and basically all they're trying to do is buy some time for Frodo and his friends to throw that ring there in the crack of doom and take down all the bad guys before they all get killed. Facing incredible odds, a giant enemy host just on the other side of the field there, Viggo, as many good commanders do, just kind of steps in and tries to reassure the troops.
Hold your ground! Hold your ground! Sons of Gondor, of Rohan, my brothers, I see in your eyes the same fear that would take the heart of me. A day may come when the courage of men fails, when we forsake our friends and break all bonds of fellowship. But it is not this day, an hour of wolves and shattered shields, when the age of men comes crashing down. But it is not this day. This day we fight. By all that you hold dear on this good earth, I bid you stand, men of the West. And then they all cheer, probably.
They do. And I got to admit, like, every time I hear this speech, like, the hair on my arm sticks up a little bit. I love the "not this day" part of it. And that'll become apparent too. The way my list is, the speeches kind of dovetail into each other. Viggo, it is not today. You know, we could fight this battle 100 times and we're probably going to get beat 99, but not today. And I love that. This is a little bit behind the curtain. And hopefully by the time this comes out, we're much happier about the result of the NBA Finals. But last year, I remember when the Cavs lost the first game, I was a little bit bummed. I went back to this speech and I thought, yeah, there may come a day when the courage of the Cleveland Cavaliers fails, but it is not today.
Oh, yeah, that'll be determined by the time this episode goes up.
It will. So we're
we'll be either very happy or very disappointed.
Or it's been an hour of broken shields.
My number five, where I talk about they come from different parts of the movie, my number five is not at the climax. It's closer to the beginning. A movie I try to get mentioned as much as possible is Boiler Room from, I'm not looking it up right now, like 2001-ish or 99-ish. Ben Affleck doesn't have a large part in this. Ben Affleck was a movie star at this point because he had just come off, this is after Good Will Hunting. So Ben Affleck's name carried some weight, but he really doesn't show up in this movie a lot. It's written and directed by Ben Younger from 2000. It has a young Vin Diesel, Nicky Catt, Scott Kahn. It stars Giovanni Ribisi. But Ben Affleck, for the parts he's on the screen, very electric. And this is your introduction to Ben Affleck, and not just to his character. This is your introduction to the world that Giovanni Ribisi has just entered. It is from Boiler Room.
Oh, I was actually cheating. I was trying to read a little bit, and I didn't realize that was the lead-in. We don't hire brokers here. We train new ones. That's it, Skippy. Pack your shit. Let's go. All right, here's the deal. I'm not here to waste your time. Okay, I certainly hope you're not here to waste mine, so I'm going to keep this short. Become an employee of this firm. You'll make your first million within 3 years. Okay, I'm going to repeat that. You will make $1 million within 3 years of your first day of employment at JT Marlin. There's no question as to whether you become a millionaire working here. The only question is, how many times over? You think I'm joking? I'm not joking. I'm a millionaire. It's a weird thing to hear, right? Let me tell you, it's a weird thing to say. I am a fucking millionaire. And guess how old I am? 27. You know what that makes me here? A fucking senior citizen. This firm is entirely comprised of people your age, not mine. Lucky for me, I happen to be very fucking good at my job, or I'd be out of one. You guys are the new blood. You are the future swinging dicks of this firm. Now you all look money hungry, and that's good. Anybody who tells you that money is the root of all evil doesn't fucking have any. They say money can't buy happiness. Look at the fucking smile on my face. Ear to ear, baby. You want details? Fine. I drive a Ferrari 355 Cabriolet. What's up? I've got a ridiculous house at the South Fork. I have every toy you could possibly imagine. And best of all, I'm liquid. So now you know what's possible. Let me tell you what's required. You are required to work your fucking ass off at this firm. We want winners here, not pikers. A piker walks at the bell. A piker asks how much vacation time you get in the first year. Vacation time? People come to work at this firm for one reason, to become filthy rich. That's it. We're not here to make friends. We're not saving the fucking manatees here, guys. You want vacation time? Go teach third grade at a public school. Okay, the first 3 months at this firm are as a trainee. You'll make $150 a week. After you're done training, you take the Series 7. You pass that, you become a junior broker, and you're opening accounts for your team leader. You open 40 accounts, you start working for yourself. The sky's the limit. A word or two about being a trainee. Your friends, your parents, other brokers, they're going to give you shit about it. It's true. $150 a week, that's not a lot of money. Pay them no mind. You need to learn this business, and this is the time to do it. Once you pass the test, none of that's going to matter. Your friends are shit. You tell them you've made 25 grand last month, they're not going to fucking believe you. Fuck them. Fuck them. Parents don't like the life you lead. Fuck your mom and dad. See how it feels when you're making their fucking Lexus payments. Now go home and think about it. Think about whether or not this is really for you. And if you decide that it isn't, listen, it's nothing to be embarrassed about. This is not for everyone. But if you really want this, you call me on Monday and we'll talk. Just don't waste my fucking time. Okay, that's it.
That's the first day of a job. That's your boss coming in, makes that speech, he's out the door. Kind of sets the tone for what's to come from that movie.
It does. My number four features significantly less F-bombs. It is from a comedy. It is my first of two comedies in the list. It is one of my all-time favorite movies starring one of my all-time favorite actors who I gushed about a couple weeks ago and Bill Murray. I mentioned that there are a few directors that really know how to use him. Harold Ramis, Wes Anderson. Ivan Reitman, while he doesn't direct a lot of stuff that Murray's in, probably can be, from a director-producer standpoint, can be lumped in there as well.
He writes his voice.
Right. And perhaps was first brought to us, Meatballs from 1979. It is a classic summer camp movie with a classic summer camp plot. You've got campers from a rich camp coming to kick the ass of the kids from the poor camp. After losing, I don't know if they're playing like baseball or whatever the hell they're doing, they've lost something like 12 straight years. Bill Murray's tripper gets up to try and fire up the troops. Sort of.
That's just the attitude we don't need. Sure, Mohawk has beaten us 12 years in a row. Sure, they're terrific athletes. They've got the best equipment that money can buy. Hell, every team they're sending over here has their own personal masseuse. Not masseur, masseuse. But it doesn't matter. Do you know that every Mohawk competitor has an electrocardiogram, blood and urine tests every 48 hours to see if there's any change in his physical condition? Do you know that they use the most sophisticated training methods from the Soviet Union, East and West Germany, and the newest Olympic power, Trinidad Tobago? But it doesn't matter. It just doesn't matter. It just doesn't matter.
It just doesn't matter.
I tell you, it just doesn't matter. It just doesn't matter. It just doesn't matter. Yeah. And even if we play so far over our heads that our noses bleed for a week to 10 days, even if God in heaven above comes down and points his hand at our side of the field, even if every man, woman, and child held hands together and prayed for us to win, it just wouldn't matter because all the really good-looking girls would still go out with the guys from Mohawk because they've got all the money. It just doesn't matter if we win or lose. It just doesn't matter. It just doesn't matter.
Or they start chanting again. It just doesn't matter.
Yeah. So there's a chant there, but I couldn't do the chant because I'm out of it by then.
That's okay. Kind of another genre is sports movies. And to me, this is like not necessarily the speech that every coach should give their team, but you watch like the NCAA tournament and you got Duke as the one seed playing Southwest Northwestern State, I feel like that's the speech that
doesn't
that
matter.
Coach should give.
You're right. 16 seed, you go out there, you lose, you were supposed to.
It
you win.
It just doesn't matter.
It just doesn't matter. When Butler faced him in the title game, yeah. Butler shouldn't have been in the title game. Nope. So they can go out there with really, it just doesn't matter. My number four, I'm kicking myself for this not coming to me right away. When we first thought of speeches, there's a scene in Peter Berg's Very Bad Things that I love. That's a messed up movie that goes all over the place.
Do you want to do that instead? Because I've not read that one yet either.
No. No, I don't. Because he gives a speech about what they're doing, and then he kisses. I forget who the other lead even is. Like, he gives this big dramatic speech, and then he kisses one of his friends on the face. And it's just such a good moment. It's hilarious. But I couldn't find it anywhere, so I may have made it all up. But in looking for it, I remembered, oh, I love Pump Up the Volume. And Christian Slater gives quite a few awesome speeches in Pump Up the Volume. So I highlighted this one. It's one of the longer ones. Like,
thankfully.
It's longer than the first one that Ryan had to read. But it's such a good speech, and this is another one that, similar to Boiler Room, it takes place earlier in the movie and kind of kicks off everything. So this is from Happy Harry Hard-On in Pump Up the Volume.
You hear about some kid who did something stupid, something desperate. What possessed him? How could he do such a terrible thing? Well, it's quite simple, actually. Consider the life of a teenager. You have parents, teachers telling you what to do. You have movies, magazines, and TV telling you what to do. But you know what you have to do? Your job. Your purpose is to get accepted, get a cute girlfriend, think up something great to do with the rest of your life. What if you're confused and you can't imagine a career? What if you're funny looking and can't get a girlfriend? You see, no one wants to hear it. But the terrible secret is that being young is sometimes less fun than being dead. Suicide is wrong. But the interesting thing about it is how uncomplicated it seems. You know, there you are. You've got all these problems swarming around in your brain, and here is one incredibly simple solution. I'm surprised it doesn't happen every day around here. Now, they're going to say, I said offing yourself was simple, but no. It's not simple. It's like everything else. You have to read the fine print. For instance, assuming that there is a heaven, who would ever want to go there, you know? I mean, think about it. It's cool. You're sitting up on this cloud. It's nice, you know, it's quiet. There's no teachers. There's no parents. But guess what? There's nothing to do. Fucking boring. Another thing to remember about suicide is that it's not a pretty picture. I mean, first of all, you shit your shorts, you know? So there you are, dead. People are crying. Girls you never spoke to were saying, why? And you have a load in your shorts. That's the way I see it. Sue me. Now, they're saying I shouldn't think stuff like this. They're saying that something is wrong with me, that I should be ashamed. Well, I'm sick of being ashamed. I mean, aren't you? I don't mind being dejected and rejected, but I'm not going to be ashamed about it. At least pain is real. I mean, you look around and you see nothing is real. But at the least, the pain is real. You know, the show isn't real. This isn't me. I'm using a voice disguiser. I'm a phony fuck just like my dad, just like anybody. You see, the real me is as worried as the rest of you. They say, I'm disturbed. Well, of course I'm disturbed. I mean, we're all disturbed. And if we're not, why not? Doesn't this blend of blindness and blandness want to make you do something crazy? Then why not do something crazy? It makes a hell of a lot more sense than blowing your fucking brains out, you know? Go nuts, go crazy, get creative. You got problems? Just chuck them, nuke them. Think you're moody? Make them think you're crazy. Make them think you might snap. They think you got attitude? You show them some real attitude. Come on, go nuts, get crazy. Hey, no more Mr. Nice Guy.
At which point the kids are listening on the radio, throwing stuff in the bathtub, throwing stuff in the microwave. It's an awesome turning point moment in this movie where he started a rebellion.
In my number three, I think at this point, by the time the speech has happened, the rebellion has already started and it's sort of ended. At least the rebels have accepted their defeat at the hands of Dean Wormer. It is from John Landis's 1978 Animal House, the speech given by John Belushi, Bluto, at the end of the movie. The Deltas, even after being on double secret probation from Dean Wormer, have continued their toga partying shenanigans, resulting in their charter being revoked and members of the fraternity kicked out of school. Facing the possibility of being drafted into the army, Bluto attempts to rally the troops with an impassioned, if not historically inaccurate, speech.
What? Over? Did you say over? Nothing is over until we decide it is. Was it over when the Germans bombed Pearl Harbor? Hell no. It ain't over now, because when the going gets tough, the tough get going. Who's with me? Let's go!
Runs out of the room. No one else runs with him.
What the fuck happened to the Delta I used to know? Where's the spirit? Where's the guts? Huh? This could be the greatest night of our lives, but you're gonna let it be the worst. Ew, we're afraid to go with you, Bluto. We might get in trouble. Well, just kiss my ass from now on. Not me. I'm not gonna take this. Warmer, he's a dead man. Marmalard, dead. Niedermeyer?
That's basically what's got the troops ready to go. Niedermeyer, dead! Everybody, dead. Just that line about, was it over when the Germans bombed Pearl Harbor, is a line that I say at least once a month. And it's amazing how many times I say that, and people look at me like I am an idiot. And I have to say, and it completely ruins it. I have to be like, no, I understand that the Japanese bombed Pearl Harbor. What you don't understand is that that's from a movie from the 70s. It's called Animal House. You should watch it. Get a sense of humor.
My number three, this one does come at...
Speaking of sense of humor. And-
yeah. This is the comedy. This is the only like straight comedy I have on mine. And this does come from the climax of the movie. This is from Team America World Police. It's one of the best movie speeches ever. It's hilarious, but it makes a fantastic point. And Trey Parker and Matt Stone are two of the smartest comedy writers ever. And this speech, as many South Park episodes as they are, the South Park movie, this, Book of Mormon, in a time capsule, if we could put anything from Trey Parker and Matt Stone in there to kind of demonstrate how socially conscious and aware and smart they are, it would be this speech from the end of Team America World Police, where he's trying to justify the actions they need to take, because it's vulgar, it's a fart joke for their audience, but yet it says so much more than just fart, fart, ha, ha.
It says dicks. We're dicks. We're reckless, arrogant, stupid dicks. And the Film Actors Guild are pussies. Kim Jong-il is an asshole. Pussies don't like dicks because pussies get fucked by dicks. But dicks also fuck assholes. Assholes that just want to shit on everything. Pussies may think they can deal with assholes their way, but the only thing that can fuck an asshole is a dick. With some balls. The problem with dicks is they fuck too much or fuck when it isn't appropriate, and it takes a pussy to show them that. But sometimes, pussies can be so full of shit that they become assholes themselves, because pussies are an inch and a half away from assholes. I don't know much about this crazy, crazy world, but I do know this. If you don't let us fuck this asshole, we're going to have our dicks and pussies all covered in shit.
It's such a good speech that's so accurate in so many ways. And I just...
Pussies are an inch and a half away from assholes.
I had to have that on my list just because I had to hear Ryan make that speech. And it was worth every
penny. And it's actually less vulgar than your number five.
Oh, yeah. Wait till we get to number one.
Jesus.
Yeah, so you're number two.
My number two does not actually feature any cursing, I'm pretty sure, unless you consider hell cursing.
I do.
This is a movie that I reference often on the show, because I am that guy that likes movies that are from before my time. And every time I do reference this movie, I reference this particular speech, and I had thought about leaving it off my list, but then I thought I'd have to be some kind of dick with some really big balls to leave off the Peter Finch speech from Sidney Lumet's Network that I rave so much about. This movie in general is, I feel like, way, way, way ahead of its time. There's a speech that Faye Dunaway has earlier in the movie where she talks about the crap that people will watch on the network, and maybe they ought to put on a reality show from these terrorists that are going around robbing banks. I don't feel like we're all that far from that now. A lot of the things that they hit on in this movie are becoming every day closer and closer to what our actual, not just our media landscape is like, but what our landscape is like as a country. Finch's Howard Beale goes from being the cushy, top-ranked newsman at the network to basically being out on his ass and really kind of finding out what it's like on the streets and how pissed off people really are. And at this point, he's sort of the voice of the disenfranchised, and he basically gives them a call to arms, which I maybe have mentioned a time or two before.
This was the obvious one. Like, as soon as you mentioned Independence Day and doing this one, this is the first one that came to mind. I did leave it off because I figured if you didn't have it on, we couldn't not mention it.
Right. But I'm glad you get to read it now.
Yeah. So I'm glad you put it on there so that we do get to pay it justice, because just mentioning it, this is probably one of my favorites ever. It just wasn't vulgar enough for me to want to hear you read it. I don't have to tell you things are bad. Everybody knows things are bad. It's a depression. Everybody's out of work or scared of losing their job. The dollar buys a nickel's worth. Banks are going bust. Shoekeepers get to keep a gun under the counter. Punks are running wild on the street. And there's nobody anywhere who seems to know what to do. And there's no end to it. We know the air is unfit to breathe and our food is unfit to eat. We sit watching our TVs while some local newscaster tells us that today we had 15 homicides and 63 violent crimes, as if that's the way it's supposed to be. We know things are bad, worse than bad. They're crazy. It's like everything, everywhere is going crazy, so we don't go out anymore. We sit in a house, and slowly the world we are living in is getting smaller, and all we say is, please, at least leave us alone in our living rooms. Let me have my toaster and my TV and my steel-belted radials, and I won't say anything. Just leave us alone. Well, I'm not going to leave you alone. I want you to get mad. I don't want you to protest. I don't want you to riot. I don't want you to write your congressman, because I wouldn't know what to tell you to write. I don't know what to do about the depression and the inflation and the Russians and the crime in the street. All I know is that you've got to get mad. You've got to say, I'm a human being, goddammit. My life has value. So I want you to get up now. I want all of you to get up out of your chairs. I want you to get up right now and go to the window. Open it and stick your head out and yell, I'm mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore. I want you to get up right now. Sit up. Go to your windows. Open them and stick your head out and yell, I'm mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore. Things have got to change. But first, you've got to get mad. You've got to say, I'm mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore. Then we'll figure out what to do about the depression and the inflation and the oil crisis. But first, get up out of your chairs. Open the window, stick your head out, and yell, and say it. I'm mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore. I've lived for that moment right there.
No, that was great. I honestly closed my eyes, and I thought that I was sitting across from Vince McMahon. I was like, this is great. This movie needs to be remade with
starring
Vince
McMahon.
Yes, absolutely.
My number two isn't quite an iconic of a scene, because that movie, people that haven't seen the movie Network, that don't know what the movie Network is,
maybe don't know where it comes from, but they know that
they know I'm mad as hell and I'm not going to take it anymore. My number two ends with one of my favorite lines in a movie ever. It is from one of my favorite movies ever, written and directed by Joss Whedon. It's from Serenity, the movie adaptation of Firefly. It's what kicks off the third act. Mal and his crew have come across some information that nobody's supposed to know, and they can either bury it and go on living their lives, or they can try to expose it and try to create a revolution from this information. And this moment, he's just kind of selling his crew on what he wants to do from here.
This report is maybe 12 years old. Parliament buried it, and it remained buried until River dug it up. This is what they feared she knew, and they were right to fear, because there's a whole universe of folk who are going to know about it too. They're going to see it. Somebody has to speak for these people. Y'all got on this boat for different reasons, but you've come to the same place. So now I'm asking more of you than I have before. Maybe all. Because sure as I know anything, I know this. They will try again. Maybe on another world. Maybe on this very ground swept clean. A year from now, 10, they'll swing back to the belief that they can make people better. And I do not hold to that. So no more running. I aim to misbehave.
That I aim to misbehave is such a Joss Whedon line, because it sums up that whole speech. That I aim to misbehave. They're doing everything that the Alliance doesn't want them to do. That one little line is so brilliant, and I absolutely love that.
my number one is, it's not necessarily from a movie that I love. It's not my favorite movie on this list for sure. But as far as the speech goes, I love the speech. I'm sure some of it has been embellished from when it actually happened. That's kind of why it goes number one on my list. We mentioned the war movies are a genre where you can pick a lot of speeches from. Patton is kind of, the movie opens with a great speech from General Patton about war's not about dying for your country, it's about making the other son of a bitch die for his, which is a great line in a great speech. I had in a previous life the Braveheart speech on my list because I like that a lot too. And as many war movie speeches, there's probably even more sports movies speeches. You've got Denzel from We Are the Titans, Pacino's inch by inch speech,
Hoosiers,
yeah, there's a couple. James Gammon's speech to the Indians in Major League, take your pick of the speeches in Field of Dreams. But I feel like the granddaddy of them all, despite the fact that this movie came out well after those did, comes from Kurt Russell playing Herb Brooks in Gavin O'Connor's Miracle from 2004, pumping up a room full of college kids in the Lake Placid Olympics to go out and kick the collective ASS of the USSR.
Great moments are born from great opportunity. And that's what you have here tonight, boys. That's what you've earned here tonight. One game. If we played them 10 times, they might win 9. But not this game. Not tonight. Tonight, we skate with them. Tonight, we stay with them. And we shut them down because we can. Tonight, we are the greatest hockey team in the world. You were born to be hockey players, every one of you. And you were meant to be here tonight. This is your time. Their time is done. It's over. I'm sick and tired about hearing what a great hockey team the Soviets have. Screw them. This is your time. Now go out there and take it.
To me, like, that's sort of the epitome of, not that I've played professional sports in my life, but if you're going to give a fiery locker room speech, I feel like that's going to be what you do. And because it does come from a place of authenticity, Herb Brooks gave a speech that fired up his kids, and they went out and beat the Russians in the semifinals. And it was such a good speech that not only did they beat the Russians, but they won the next game, too, to win the gold medal.
And the Al Michaels call is where the name of the movie comes from. This is another one. Like, I'm mad as hell, and I'm not going to take it anymore. People know, do you believe in miracles?
Sure.
They know Al Michaels' voice saying it. They may not remember it from this game, but that's where it came from. I left off sports movies because that's a rabbit hole I didn't want to dig down, because I already had 9 movies listed, and the 4, I'm disappointed that I had to cut out. One of them was Network, so I'm glad we got to that. My number one would be Deep Blue Sea, the speech Samuel Jackson delivers, because it's just a funny moment. It's one of my favorite moments in a movie ever. For years, that was my birthday post. If it was your birthday, I posted on Facebook or MySpace that speech from,
or Friendster,
from Deep Blue Sea, because it is a great speech, and Sammy Jackson delivers it so great, and then he gets eaten by a terrible CGI shark. But I had to put my number one there because I had to hear Ryan read Tom Cruise's speech from Magnolia. Paul Thomas Anderson's Magnolia has multiple great speeches, including the opening monologue. But Tom Cruise's character is such a pile of shit and such a vile human being. And this is where we're introduced to him from. His Frank T.J. Mackey is just a terrible, terrible human being that you'll find out through the rest of the movie. But this is what he does with his life. He's paid to give speeches. This is probably my favorite Tom Cruise performance in a movie is him as Frank T.J. Mackey, because it's such a phenomenal part and he does so well. But this speech is kind of our introduction to him, to see what he does for a living. And it follows up the your Jock Jams type music to get the crowd pumped, and then he delivers, and now Ryan is going to deliver.
As much as I felt like Aragorn, today is not that day, and Herb Brooks, this is that day, they dovetail well together. I do feel like most of your speeches actually do. Basically, one goes into the other.
Respect the cock and tame the cunt. Tame it. Take it on head first with the skills that I will teach you and work to say no. You will not control me. No. You will not take my soul. No. You will not win this game. Because it is a game, guys. You want to think it's not, huh? You want to think it's not? You go back to the schoolyard and you have that crush on big-titted Mary Jane. Respect the cock. You're embedding this thought. I'm the one who's in charge. I'm the one who says yes, no, now, here. And it's universal, man. It's evolutional. It's anthropological. It's biological. It's animal. We are men.
And then he simulates thrusting his hips, which Ryan's doing right now.
I like that you're doing this.
The Dave directions on this. Let me tell you what we're going to teach Denise when we put on our calendars to work and we set goals. What I say is Denise, Denise the piece. I mark it down. I write it up. And you have been warned. Because I have my lasers. I have my tasers. I have my ICMBs. I have my bazookas. I have my jets pointed right at you. Because me and my brothers, we like to celebrate. And on the 1st of May, we celebrate V-Day. And come June, ho-ho, baby, it's the lick of my spoon. Come August, we like to celebrate St. Suck My Big Fat Fucking Sausage. I set goals for myself, and when I say I don't want to take it anymore, I will not take it anymore. Do you think she's your friend, Jeff? You want to come here and you think she's your friend? They're not your friends. Do you really think she's going to be there when things go bad? Huh, guys? When things go wrong, do you think they're going to be there for us? Oh, you think again. Oh, fucking Denise. Denise the Peace. You're going to give me that cherry pie, sweet mama baby.
That speech is so good. And Tom Cruise delivers it so well. Oh, that was worth every fucking second. every episode of the podcast we've ever done built up to that moment, and it paid off.
That climactic moment.
Yes, it paid off perfectly. Were there any others that stuck out to you?
Where do you go from there? Honestly, if I could sit down for 2 hours and just list movie speeches that I really, really like, I could very easily do that. One of them that I'm ashamed that I didn't think of at the time, but as I'm reading Affleck from Boiler Room, I'm thinking of Alec Baldwin in Glengarry Glen Ross.
I thought about that one so long.
Well, I should have put it on there for that very reason. But that's a great speech, and it's one that, like the mad as hell part, maybe you've never seen Glengarry Glen Ross.
You know, always be closing.
Yeah, you know, always be closing, coffees for closers, you know, the steak knives bit. And like Affleck, Alec Baldwin's not really in the movie. He's in right at the beginning. He sets the tone for, instead of the entire career at the firm, he sets it for this night of what these guys who are grizzled guys who are senior fucking citizens are going to have to do. So that one, you know, probably very easily could have made it.
And that's a rabbit hole I kind of did go down, because I did think of Glengarry Glen Ross, because in Boiler Room there's a part where they're watching that speech, yeah, and Ben Affleck is reciting it. That led me down to Wall Street, where Michael Douglas gives a couple really great speeches. Yeah, like there's a couple really good. And I thought, like, Boiler Room kind of encompasses those for me. So I didn't want to have, I think the movies I had were all pretty different, and all the speeches were kind of different. But yeah, I could have filled the top five with just those three movies, with just Boiler Room, Glengarry Glen Ross, and Wall Street. I probably could add three or four, probably five out of those.
The easy ones are not necessarily always the most fun ones. This one was easy and it was very fun. You can almost guarantee that we've left off one that I was ashamed that I didn't have Glengarry Glen Ross. There's probably hundreds that you could send to me. I'd be like, ah, oh, shit. Yeah, I should have had that one too. And we'd like to hear about it. I mean, we always like to get feedback from you guys, but certainly if you have one for this list, we'd love to hear about it. moviesonup@gmail.com. You can tweet us, like, YouTube links at moviesonup on the Twitter, or put them on our Facebook page, facebook.com/moviesonup.
Yeah, I had Deep Blue Sea, which, like I said, that was my number one right away. But then once I remembered that respect the cock, tame the cunt, I had to have Ryan say that. So that was my number one. Cancel the Apocalypse from Pacific Rim. The Idris Elba speech.
It's a great line.
It's a great line. The speech leading up to it's not that great, but I like that
and
movie.
He's so good.
He's so good. Like, I really love Idris Elba. So him delivering that speech, and then I had Network, but then the one I had that I really, it was the very final one that I cut out. Phoebe Cates and Gremlins about why she doesn't believe in Santa Claus. That speech is unlike any of the others that we had, because you take that speech out of the movie, it's the same movie. It's there purely for comedic effect, which it's a speech.
It's not a funny story.
It's not a funny story, but it's she stops in the middle of this monster attack to reminisce about her father dying in the chimney because he's pretending to be Santa Claus. And it is funny. The story's not funny, but the timing and delivery and everything, like, that one was really, really hard to leave off, but I had to have I Aim to Misbehave. I had to hear you talk about dicks, pussies, and assholes.
And cunts.
Yeah, and the Pump Up the Volume and Boiler Room, I could not leave those off. So this was a fun list, and I know that Tom Hanks had one in Saving Private Ryan. Like, yeah. I mean, without even thinking, like, I know any sports movie I love has one. Like, any war movie I love has one. Like, there's so many of these. Simon Pegg has delivered a couple in both World's End and Shaun of the Dead. I didn't even dig into those. Like, those are just coming at me now. So this is one of those. We could do this. We could do 10 parts of this episode, and each of us have no problem filling it. So,
and when there's an Independence Day 3, we'll probably do it again in 2 years. Yeah.
Yeah. So this was a fun one. And I like any time we get to deviate from just, oh, my number 5 is this movie about magic that I didn't see, and my number 3 is the same one Ryan had. Like, I like when we get to do something different. This one was fun. Next week will also be fun. Next week is our halftime show, which is one of my favorite episodes to record.
We'll probably say cunt a lot less, I think.
Probably.
Yeah.
Yeah.
This episode was not for kids.
No. Let us know what your favorite movie speeches are. Share them on our Facebook page. We'd love that. Tweet them at us.
Send us an MP3 of you doing your favorite one. That is what I would love to have. Because,
you know, I loved watching them. And I went down a rabbit hole and I watched so many speeches from so many movies just because they're fun to watch. They're little 2-minute to 5-minute segments of a movie that is just, it's cool to just see. So definitely share them with us. I know we missed some. Let us know. And then next week is our halftime show. Tweet us what your favorite 5 movies of the year so far are. I'd love to see what other people are. It'll be recorded before then, but let us know what's going on. There's been, usually I'm reaching for 5 movies at this point, but as of recording this, there's 4 movies already that I have no problem putting on the top 5. There's still a few I gotta watch. So next week will be fun. Thanks for bearing with us through the rock and magic. I feel like this payoff was worth it, just to hear Ryan say tame the cunt a couple of times. So until next week,
keep it tame.